News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. I think I love that bump, Copper. Which one was that? Do you recall which one that was? Do you see it?
It is In the Dark.
By?
I don't know.
I think that was a Three Doors Down. I think it was. Man, okay. I got to get that song on my song on my playlist. Yes, indeed. All right. So, hey, listen, I'm going to number two on the... What'd you just say, Copper? I'm sorry. I just talked right over you.
Oh, then I'll pull it up and double check the artist.
Yeah. Okay. Good deal. Okay. Listen, I'm going to number two in the Triple Dipper. I'm calling this thing, There's a Big Nasty Coming. And by the way, Copper, I got a clip up on the board there. If you can get clip one ready for me too, I'd appreciate that. We're going to use clip one here momentarily. So... Liberals are freaking out right now. Yeah, they are. There is a complete like meltdown going on in the media regarding Elon Musk buying Twitter. I mean, how else are we going to message? What shall we do? They might be able to say what they want to say. Well, that's exactly what's happening right now. But here's the deal. Negative campaign ads. We all hate them. We all hate them. Do both sides do it? Yes. I've seen Republicans do it. I've seen Democrats do it. I've been the victim of it. It's ridiculous sometimes how these ads go, and I'll tell you a few examples here in just a minute. But the thing is this. There is an extra level of desperation right now among the left to where they believe that they're not going to have any issues to run on that have any popularity such that they are right now being predicted to be building up what could be one of the most negative campaign seasons we've ever seen. Whoo! So let's take a look at some of their freakout. First of all, Copper, you good to go? You ready to clip one? So this is a little montage. By the way, I'm going to go ahead and just play the whole thing. It's only like 30 seconds long, but it does have one little brief moment where it just plays music because it's a video. So just bear with that piece. But listen to this montage of liberal pundits talking about how hard it's going to be to message once Elon Musk takes control of Twitter, what are we going to do? Play the clip, Copper.
Sounds like a bunch of gibberish. We have a First Amendment. There is no free speech problem. Twitter is not the government. Twitter is a private company that can say, no, you're not allowed to be a Nazi on Twitter. I mean...
Elon Musk, who seems to, at least at this point, possess more expansive views on speech than Twitter's current management, has purchased Twitter. That has sent shockwaves through much of the anti-disinformation political universe.
Is there any danger in a Twitter owned by Elon Musk?
Misinformation and disinformation could be amplified considerably.
Moderation is different than free speech, and moderation is hard. It's extremely hard. In fact, it's an art. It's not a science. It's an unwinnable game.
He is sort of going to unleash the trolls, right? I think he is saying, you get to say whatever you want. I'm going to take away the guardrails. It seems to me that it's about free speech of straight white men. And so let them have it.
This future in which there would actually be more abundant and equitable speech terrifies the crap out of people like Elon Musk.
It's a problem that's bigger than Elon Musk. What the right has already seized is this ground that they're on the side of free speech. They're really not. They're for the political version of yelling fire in a movie theater.
Apparently, so we're for the political version of yelling fire in a movie theater. No, actually we're not. We all remember what it was like when they wouldn't allow the Hunter Biden laptop to be a story, and Twitter literally turned off the account of New York Post who was trying to report it. It was news. It's now been verified. All of these things are legit. Or how about just the fact that President Trump himself had his own account canceled? So, yeah, I do believe there's a difference. There's a story here I'm looking at townhall.com. I won't go in much into this one. It just basically says MSNBC freaks out about the safety of women and non-whites because Elon Musk is buying Twitter. And it says their lack of self-awareness is comical. Yes, it is. Everything you just heard this little montage complain about are the things that they've been doing now for years. Well, here's why I'm calling this A Big Nasty Is Coming. Because that level of panic about not being allowed to any further obscure the messaging, change the messaging, censor the messaging, is going to drive them to a different version of messaging. Story here in The Federalist, written yesterday by Ellie Reynolds. Title of it is Democrats Have Nothing to Offer Voters, So They're Banking on Smearing and Censoring Their Opposition. That's all they've got. I mean, what is it they're going to run on? Right now, Biden's approval rating is running at or below 40%. I mean, some polls have him as low as 35. CNBC has him at 38%. They've got literally nothing to work with right now. And so what they're looking at here is, okay, how do we study what's going on? French President Emmanuel Macron appeared to win even with a 36% approval rating. What did he do? Smears and censorship. That's what it did. So yeah, the Biden administration, it says, has helped to drive its own approval ratings into the ground with crisis after self-induced crisis. Inflation, energy prices, the botched withdrawal from Afghanistan, Biden's war on oil and gas, the ineffective means by which we're trying to handle Ukraine. We got executive orders ignoring the biological differences between male and female. We got transgender bathroom issues. We got transgender sports issues. We got, you know, weaponizing the DOJ against parents who speak out at school board meetings. All this stuff is mounting up. The Democrats have nothing to run on that appeals to anybody except their most ardent base. So what are they going to do? Well, the storyline here is what you have to do is you have to create hate and fear. If you don't create hate and fear because you don't have a storyline, you lose. So the only way they can win at this point is trying to make you fear the opposition, fear the Republicans. That's why you had those knuckleheads a moment ago saying, all they want to do is just scream fire in a movie theater. No, that's not true. Well, the model for this started in Alabama. What? Yes. Story here from our own Dale Jackson, dated September of 2018. That would be Dale Jackson writing for Yellowhammer at the time. Says Alabama is to blame for Brett Kavanaugh getting Roy Moore'd. Do y'all remember the Roy Moore debacle? Let me tell you something. From a personal standpoint, I was the Republican Party chairman in Etowah County, Roy Moore's home county. I was the elected state senator at the same time for Etowah County. So therefore, I was the senior most elected official in the county and the Republican Party chairman at the time the Washington Post decided to create its storylines about Roy Moore. And if you remember, by the way, there has never been anything proven, has there, to this day? Did it feel weird? Sure. Was it true? No. Did it set the stage for Brett Kavanaugh? Yes, it did. Because when they recognized that they could do this to Roy Moore, they could go ahead and do it to other people. This was the model. And Dale was right in pointing it out. He says, when Doug Jones beat Roy Moore to become Alabama's junior senator for just a few years, a message was sent to politicos all over the country that any allegation from any time period can be treated as absolute fact. The words credible allegation began to be bannered about like there was some real evidence on the table. Facts didn't even remotely matter. But that didn't stop Doug Jones, who's a lawyer, by the way, from declaring that we must pause the confirmation process to investigate the matters about Brett Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh couldn't even exonerate himself because the court of public opinion was running rampant on a mere accusation about something unsubstantiated from when he was a teenager. It was gutter politics at its worst. It started with the model created by Democrats in the U.S. Senate race in which Roy Moore didn't win against Democrat Doug Jones, who lost handily just a few years later. This is not a state that elects Democrats. Talk about an anomaly. Well, they took a guy who, you know, for all his warts and blemishes, and by the way, I have never disagreed with a Roy Moore position. I have often disagreed with a Roy Moore style. But nonetheless, when you look back at it, did we do better with Doug Jones? Nope. Because of that race, we were not able to overturn Obamacare. That one vote. We were not able to overturn Obamacare because we put Doug Jones in office. The reason why was because of gutter politics. And what we're looking at right now is, at a time when the Democrats have nothing else, it's believed that a big nasty is coming because they can't run on merit. Therefore, they have to run on fear. All right, let's take a look at this. Oh, what time we got here? I'm good on time. Storyline from the Washington Examiner, dated last year, actually, same time last year. It says, gutter politics, robocall says that candidate Susan Wright murdered her husband. This is the epitome of awful. So a Texas Republican congressional candidate named Susan Wright found out that just on the eve of the election that a robocall was going out telling voters that what really happened when her husband, the former congressman, she was running for her husband's seat, when her husband died, was that she went and intentionally got COVID knowing that he was immunocompromised because of his cancer and gave it to him so she could cash in on the insurance policy. What? What? Yes. And I hope heads roll. What I don't have is the aftermath of, hey, they took this to the authorities. But y'all, that's called desperation gutter politics. That's the big nasty right there. That's the kind of thing we may have to watch out for in the coming months. Listen, I'm going to tell you right now, I have seen it. And I have felt it. As a candidate, the teachers union hated me. I've said that multiple times. And they did everything in the world they could. I will never forget, because my wife worked at a private school and my kids went to a private school, I was declared an elitist. Never mind the fact that I was working two jobs to be able to help make that happen. Never mind the fact that we made lots of sacrifices and didn't take vacations to make that happen. But the reality is this. I was sitting there one night and the phone rang. And I picked up the phone. And a voice said, hi, do you consider yourself to be a Republican voter? I thought, well, this is interesting. Yes. And they said, between the race of Phil Williams and my opponent then was Larry Means, who would you vote for? And I said, Phil Williams. He immediately says, don't you know that Phil Williams sends his kids to private schools to keep them away from commoners? And I went, excuse me? And he goes, oh, yes. And don't you know? And he went on to tell me all kinds of things about myself I'd never heard before. And I thought, well, this is going to be interesting. I said, do tell. What else you got there on that list? Oh, sir, well, Phil Williams. It was the list of just the most heinous things, how I was an elitist, how I kept my kids away from common folk. It was just, oh, my gosh. And I finally said, well, you know what's funny? I am Phil Williams. Silence on the other side. And I said, and I want to speak to your supervisor. And I really thought he was going to say, click. No, he didn't. He went, okay. And next thing I know, I've got another voice on there who goes, hello? And I said, yeah, who's this? This is Jim. Hey, Jim, where are you? Michigan. I said, hey, Jim, guess what? You're calling around saying things about me, and they're not true. Oh, it was a very stiff conversation. We had a lot of fun with that one. But that's what they do, folks. Hey, listen, we got to take a break right now. Copper, if you will tell line 5, I just saw that we have a caller. Go ahead and tell them to please hang on during the break or call right back. Either way, we're going to get them as soon as we can. Let's go ahead and move to that break right now. And I'll come back and talk more about the big nasty that we think may be coming. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. You guys hang on. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Hey, I got a caller on line 5 who held on during the break, and I certainly appreciate that, so let me grab that. Robert from Decatur. Robert, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm good, sir. What's on your mind?
Hey, okay, two comments. There's one individual that we both have, are mutual friends with, that he says you're the best thing around. That's Ken Johnson.
Ken Johnson.
He speaks very highly of you all the time. So you got one guy that likes you a lot.
Well, at least but he's a good one. I tell you what, I love Ken.
He is. And the other thing is, as far as gutter politics, and we got it really bad with the establishment on the Republican side. I mean, look at what Richard Shelby, he had a big part in why Doug Jones won. And just to be honest with you, Katie Britt, his cohort, is right in there. We got a good man in Mo Brooks. And the other ones are into gutter politics, too. So just kind of want to say that. Thank you.
And I appreciate the opinion, man. Thanks so much. And tell Ken I said, hey.
Thanks.
All right, folks, Robert from Decatur. And you know, I said earlier on, I see it on both sides. But I think what we're smelling right now is desperation on the side of the Democrats. That's why I think it's going to be worse than usual. You always have negative campaign ads. Sometimes, though, sometimes they go beyond the pale. Like the one I told you about right before the break about the congressional candidate in Texas last year who found out robocalls were going out saying that she had basically effectively murdered her husband in order to cash in on the insurance. I mean, and it was, by the way, here's the tackiness got even worse when it starts saying, citing anonymous sources, okay, and nothing attributing to where the robocall came from. Well, listen, I'm just going to tell you, negative campaigning, and the studies say that negative campaigning works. University of California put out a piece in September of 2019, and the title of it is Why Negative Campaigning Works and How to Fight It, by the way. And it points out on here that there's been any number of those that have stuck in the lexicon of campaign seasons. Things like, remember death panels? Or back when Richard Nixon ran and he was called Tricky Dick? Or the attempt to undermine John Kerry's 2004 campaign, talking about his Vietnam record? It became known as Swift Boating. It refers now to any negative political attack. By the way, this article, which is skewed, calls that untrue. My recollection, though, was that was a speaking truth. But it says that if you got to deal with it, you got to recognize there's no shortage of insults, mudslinging, and distortions in politics. No matter how often candidates swear they'll run a positive campaign, negativity seeps in. Why is that? Because it says that our brains are wired to remember those things. If they trigger an emotional response, even I'm not talking about you have to yell out loud. I'm just saying it triggered something like anti-Second Amendment. Oh, that gets me. Well, maybe that sticks. Emotion-based, usually when it's fear or anger-based, sticks for some reason in the psychology of a voter. It says if you come at an issue negatively but are later reminded of the positive aspects of it, you sometimes still think it's a bust because the first impression you had, remember, first impressions matter. So that's why you see these things getting out there. It talks about how candidates should try to do things like reframe the issue, rename it even, give it a different look. Take the same thing and hand it right back to them. When they say, he's going to do something that will, 40% of the jobs will be gone. You might want to point out that 60% of the jobs will be here. You know, that kind of thing. All right. There's stuff like that. Then there's also the fact that you offer them a new and exciting possibility. You be the candidate who can go places that other candidates can't go. It's the only way around it. But right now, what I think we're going to see, folks, is what I'm calling the big nasty. I think we're going to see desperation in the Democrats so that we get almost back to like a Brett Kavanaugh style of campaigning. Anything and everything they can throw because they have no issues to stand upon. It may get ugly. Brace yourselves. All right, folks, listen, we're coming right back with one of my favorites, the Grand Council, Jeff Poor, Dale Jackson, and me. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.